Welcome back to another episode of Winning Through Culture. I am Tim Flanagan, and I am very excited today to be here with special guest, DJ Vanas. DJ Eagle Bear Vanas is a thought leader, celebrated speaker, and best-selling author whose expertise is in showing people and organizations how to apply a warrior spirit at work. And I look forward to talking about that. He is the author of the best-selling book, The Tiny Warrior, which is printed in 6 countries, and the novel Spirit on the Run. DJ's newest book, The Warrior Within, was published by Penguin Random House in 2022, and that's a fantastic book. I've read it, and we'll touch on a lot of the concepts in that book. DJ is an enrolled member of the Ottawa Tribe and is a former U.S. Air Force officer. He now spends his time inspiring organizations to strengthen their tribes, to practically apply the warrior spirit principles, and to serve at their best, staying resilient and leading with courage. For over 2 decades, he's delivered his dynamic programs in 49 states and overseas to clients such as Walt Disney, NASA, Intel Corporation, U.S. Military, Subaru, Costco, Mayo Clinic, and hundreds of tribal governments and organizations. He's also been invited to speak at the White House, not once, but twice. He holds a BS degree from the United States Air Force Academy and an MS from the University of Southern Cal, and has served on the board of directors for the National Board of Certified Counselors. DJ is featured in the PBS documentary, The Warrior Tradition. I highly recommend you check that out, which explores the warrior spirit traditions across Indian country. And he was also the host of his own PBS special, Discovering Your Warrior Spirit. DJ has been featured in high-profile media outlets such as NBC, The Daily Stoic Podcast, United Airlines, Hemispheres Magazine, and Forbes. He's also a regular contributor and writer to Men's Journal Magazine. I wanted to cover all that, DJ, to say thank you for being with us today and to give everybody a sense as to what a rich time they will have. So thank you again for being here.
Thank you for having me, Tim. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
As am I. And it's funny how we met. My memory, I think, is clear on this. I was listening to Joe DeSena podcast, Spartan, which is now The Hard Way. He changed the name of that podcast a couple months ago. And you were a guest. And I was on a run. I remember it was a Monday morning. I was on a run. It was nice and humid. And I stopped, immediately bought your book about halfway through the podcast, and then sent you a message.
Yeah.
And said, I would love to meet with you. And you came and spoke at our organization, the Plura Group, which you did a fantastic job. We were still coming out of a virtual world in that sense. I mean, there's so much we could talk about today, DJ. You're a veteran, you're Native American, dedicated speaker and author, and family man. You've got a very inspirational story. You've drawn a lot of inspiration, obviously, from your Native American background, philosophy, and traditions. What parallels, I am curious, do you see culturally in the tribal communities and the business community today?
Well, I think what it comes down to is a sense of unity and purpose, you know, as a group. And, you know, in our tribes, there's a lot of, you know, when you have common virtues, values, goals, you know, you create that sense of tribe. You know, that's what sustained our tribal communities through millennia, you know, and going through especially the last several hundred years of trial and tribulation and turbulence, there's still a unity there based on those common goals, common values. In a business community, I think we're responsible as leaders to foster that in our own groups as well. You know, creating a culture, I mean, just like the title of the podcast here, Winning Through Culture, creating culture, it's a methodic step-by-step process. It requires a lot of patience. It's a lot of heavy lifting at times. But when you get that right, everything just clicks. We're so much more efficient. We're so much more productive. We feel better in that environment, you know, because we created it to be a vision of what we wanted to see and where we wanted to be. So if you look at it that way, that's, you know, kind of how I see, even when I was creating my own business, is I wanted to make sure that I created something that was useful, beneficial, but also I've always wanted to be easy to work with. I like working with groups that are the same way, which you guys were a great example of that. You basically, you know, get back to a place where you connect to people that you like, that you trust, that you want to play with, you know, if you look at it that way. And so that's the kind of community I've always tried to build around me and the activities that I have. And I think that's also the reason why, too, working across Indian country, I've worked with over 500 tribal nations in the last 25 years. You know, going into those communities and feeling like a part of their culture is always something that I've absolutely loved, you know, in the past, too. So, yeah, I think we're responsible for creating that.
And you said it appropriately so. It's a heavy lift.
Yeah, creating a culture is work.
Yeah, and I'm curious when you think about the organizations you've worked with and presented to, and what have you seen as some of the, I don't even know, best practices is not the right word, but consistencies of organizations culturally that create great unity and have a sense of purpose. Have you seen themes in that regard?
Yeah, I have actually. And that's a great question, because that's really kind of the goal, is trying to figure out what that looks like so that we can replicate it or kind of emulate that in what we do. But one of the big indicators is the fact that culture is an ongoing conversation. It's not something you do every couple months. It's not just something we put on the wall as a, you know, a vision statement and our values as an organization. It's a constant conversation where we're talking about how we do it here, how we roll, how we handle problems, how we take care of each other, how we contribute to our clients, how we are developing ourselves continually. It's a constant ongoing conversation about what matters to us and why we do what we do. Mm-hmm. And the more often you can have that, and not just in meetings or, you know, like I said, every once in a while, but as much as you can make that an ongoing conversation, the more cohesion you have and the more unity you create, and then everybody's on the same page and then you're clicking.
Yeah. We've talked about this before. I mean, your book, The Warrior Within, which is a fantastic book, does outline a new model for personal power in the face of overwhelming chaos. And it's fair to say there's been some chaos in the last 3 to 4 years.
Oh, yeah. Just a bit.
And maybe accelerating, but many business owners and leaders obviously face change and chaos and just a, you know, every day's a new adventure spirit. Can you share how the model you outline in The Warrior Within helps manifest control and, I'll say, the right way path in uncertainty?
Yeah. You know, it comes back to having a sense of clarity in what we do. You know, being able to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves the right way. I think that's incredibly important to create resiliency, to create effectiveness in what we do. You know, I say this in the book several times, and I always say it when I'm doing my programs, is you can't be a warrior when you're falling apart. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, when we're running around with our hair on fire and we're in chaos, we spread that into our teams. And it's hard to get anything done and get things done to a high level of quality when we're in that state. Yeah. So the biggest part is having practices and habits that get us back to a centered place and a place of clarity, taking time for ourselves, not just when it's convenient, because it never will be.
Yeah.
But making that a priority where we actually create mental breathing room in our lives and in our careers, especially if we're in a leadership position, because then the pressure, you know, and the anxiety gets even higher, the responsibility level is higher. So we have to make that a priority. Controlling what we can. It's going back to a place of, you know, sometimes we are clinging to stuff that we have very little control over, but we're burning up a whole lot of time and energy obsessing about it, ruminating about it. And it depletes us.
Yeah.
It's like spinning our tires in a snowbank. You know, we're not going anywhere, but we sure are burning up a lot of energy trying.
Yeah.
So control what you can, and also delegating, you know, letting people do what you put them in charge of doing. That's another big part of making sure that we're all distributing the load accordingly so that we're all productive and it's not out of balance, especially towards the leaders. It's our responsibility to make sure they know what they're doing, that they have the support, the right tools.
Yep.
That's it. That's it. But yeah, I think those are some of the things that, you know, in the book really highlights, you know, how to stay on that path. You know, I talk about the vision, and traditionally we would have ceremonies to figure out our vision,
vision quest. Yep.
Yeah. And it all comes back to getting back to a place of clarity.
Clarity.
You know, when we operate from that place, we're so much better at what we do at every level.
Yep. Well, I mean, I know for myself, the book, it seems like every year I read a couple of books that are like, yeah, this is one to reread. And I believe The Warrior Within is one of those books. And I know for me, the things that really kind of struck a chord, which have been a challenge I've been working on, is pace. both internal and external.
Yeah.
Because to your point, when you're going real fast, there's not a lot of reflection time. There's not a lot of time to, you're not really delegating at that point. You're probably abdicating or just tossing off.
And, yeah.
You know, you talked about controlling what we can. And I think the other thing that I've come to realize both through what you've spoken about there and then some of my own experiences this year spiritually is we don't really control much.
True.
But we can control our attitude and we can control our response to things and we can control our choice to be either self-reflective or, as I say, deflective, meaning, you know, mm-hmm. that's not me. So if you were picking, and I don't think this is a fair assessment, but if you were prioritizing the practices and habits of a leader to really get into a topic that is somewhat taboo, I think, which is self-care, you know, it's not something most leaders think about in my experience. What might that practice or habit be to kind of really start or have as your overarching theme that you focus on?
Yeah, another great question. I think it starts at the beginning of the day. Honestly, I think it starts at the beginning of the day, carving that time out to just simply have some quiet time. It doesn't take long, 5-10 minutes, just to have some quiet. Let the dirt settle in your mud puddle before you start stirring it up. Think about what's most important to get done that day. Think about how you want to handle yourself that day, regardless of what may come your way. And we never mm-hmm. can predict what that looks like. But just reinforcing the fact that we can take the next right action. We can stay mm-hmm. strong in the face of challenge. And just reminding ourselves of our talents, our abilities, our past, so that we have strength in this moment in the day. Mm-hmm. But I just think taking that, those few minutes in the beginning of the day, and I do this, I mean, like religion, whether I'm here in the office or whether I'm traveling, I'd start off my day the same way. And it's that 10 minutes of just quiet. And the quieter I am, the more that internal voice comes out and I get some great answers. That's where it starts. But doing those check-ins during the course of the day too. Sometimes things go a little off the rail. We get stressed. We have an interaction that doesn't go well. Well, instead of deflecting, like you were talking about, deflecting that off onto somebody else, which we can do mm-hmm. if we don't, you know.
Not intentional.
Not intentional.
Yeah.
But being able to practice that and say, okay, I need a moment here. I need a minute. I need to go take a walk or just get up and move around a little bit. Or do a little bit of deep breathing, whatever it may be. But when we practice that and process our emotions, we're not deflecting it off onto somebody else. So mm-hmm. I think that's a big part of keeping the path clear as well. But those things have to be done intentionally, because we all know that if we wait for it to be convenient, it never will be. We're all busy being busy. You know, but when we make this a priority, everything that we do is better. That's the best part of it. We're more patient, we're more kind, we're more likely to find solutions to our challenges, we're more likely to spread that vibe of balance and strength, you know, to the people that we surround ourselves with too.
Yeah. Now, in the book, one of the concepts you talk about, DJ, is warriors never fight alone.
Yeah.
How does that commitment help someone be more decisive, courageous, and strong as a leader?
Yeah. Warriors never fight alone because that's goofy. We only ever achieve so much doing it on our own. Mm-hmm. And we all know if we've ever been in that situation, and I think we've all done it, where we isolate.
Yeah.
You know, we bunker up. We kind of put ourselves into a silo when things get rough. That's the moment that we need to reach out. But it's also the most likely moment where we withdraw. So we have this internal battle going on. Mm-hmm. But when we reach out and we're surrounding ourselves with good people, we do become more courageous because we're surrounding ourselves with people who can support us and encourage us when we need it the most. It helps us be more decisive because our confidence rises when we don't feel like we're in it alone. Being alone is a hard place to be when stress starts to stack up. When we have good support structures around us, all those good elements come out of us. We are more courageous. We are braver. We're stronger. We're more resilient. We're more patient. So it really does help to surround yourself with those type of folks that you want to walk the journey with, and doing that intentionally. And we're a lot more effective at what we do. You know, as far as being clear-headed, it's such a benefit to have people you can bounce ideas off of.
Yeah.
That you can get some counsel, that you can get some accountability when we're struggling at times. Those people that are in my life are priceless to me. You know, and I've created my inner circle through the years by design. I've been very selective because I know those people I surround myself with in time is going to be who I become as well.
Yeah.
So that birds of a feather flock together thing, you know, there's a reason why that has legs, why that's been around for so long, because it's true. The good part is we get to choose who we're surrounding ourselves with. Zig Ziglar had a great quote. He said, it's hard to fly like an eagle when you're surrounded by turkeys. You know, so we got to make sure that we're surrounding ourselves with the right people.
If we could, let's touch on that for a minute, DJ, because I think Jim Rohn was credited with saying your life is going to be a reflection of the five closest people to you.
Yeah.
And I think in today's society, you're hitting on something. We're in this social media, Instagram's influencer society where things always look great.
Oh, yeah.
And people are all experts in things that they may or may not be expert in. But for you yourself, how have you gone through the process of really discerning who should be in that inner circle? Because I think that is a often overlooked reality. You know, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
There you go.
Yeah. And how have you gone through that process of discerning who should be in that inner circle? And then I'd be curious as to how do you receive from them and how do you contribute to them?
Yeah, man, good stuff, Tim. As far as knowing who to have in your inner circle, it comes through trial and error over a long period of time. Yeah, exactly. But it's an alignment of values. It's an alignment of purpose. It's having people who have similar character as not only elements that you would admire, but that you want to emulate in yourself as well. You know, I think it's important we have role models. Mm-hmm. We talk about that as just, you know, when we're kids, but we need that as adults. We need that as leaders. You know, who do you look up to? Who are you reading about? Who inspires you? And it's really cool when you can include those types of people in your inner circle. You know, a lot of my best friends, I look at as role models for me. Mm-hmm. We hold each other accountable in a good way. We're competitive with each other in a healthy way. You know, we're not competing at each other's expense. We're competing with each other in a friendly way, but it's in a competitive way.
Collaboratively competitive.
That's it. And you learn through trial and error over the years who you can trust, who you can lean on in times of need, and who you can't.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, that's a painful lesson, but it's a good one to learn because then you know going forward what your landscape looks like at that point. And then as far as how you give and take, you know, with that group is that mutual support, you know, being able to offer things to the people that are in your circle that are of benefit, that are of worth, and being able to ask questions of them to get advice, to get guidance. But I'm constantly with my inner circle. I'm sharing things that I read, things that I've learned.
Yep.
I'm asking them what they've been reading that's inspiring to them, you know, how they're working or, you know, what they've been up to, new habits or practices. We're constantly, it's a give and take. It's an ebb and flow. But making a contribution to your group is important, but it's also important to ask for things in return. Because sometimes we don't want to ask because they're like, oh, I don't want to burden anybody. But what we're doing is we're denying them a chance to support us too.
Correct.
And we all want to be of service, right? I mean, we do.
Yeah. If they're in your inner circle, there's a high probability they're a person that wants to be a servant. So
that's it. That's
let
it.
Them serve. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't take that away from them because sometimes we just, you know, we go, no, I'll figure it out on my own. But it's so much more fun to figure it out with others that you enjoy being around, that you trust, that you can have fun with, that you can grow with. Mm-hmm. It just makes the whole process so much better and it makes us better.
Yeah. And I appreciate you sharing that because, again, I think the concept of that inner circle, you know, you're going to have one, right?
Yeah.
Whether you choose that inner circle by default or you intentionally build that inner circle and protect it.
Yeah.
I think it's a really, as a leader, it's an important part of your life that can be easily overlooked and be subconsciously not attended to. You've got to be intentional about it. So I appreciate you.
Absolutely agree. Yeah.
So I want to touch on something relative to the book because the warrior within, mm-hmm. So the connotation of warrior, you know, clearly there's a Native American component of that. There's a military component of that.
Mm-hmm.
As we talked about Joe DeSena and Spartan, that's kind of a big part of the, you know, the warrior spirit of the Spartan tribe.
Right.
Those of us crazy enough to do those races. But tell me, you know, and again, our society now, words are taken into different contexts. So
sure.
I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Try to find the best way to say that. But what is a warrior in your mind? And what is the role of a warrior in business?
I appreciate you bringing this up because, yeah, words are loaded. You know, everybody's coming from their own angle. And it's important to define this and unpack it, what that word warrior really means, or mm-hmm. the approach that I take.
Yep.
And it's coming from a tribal-centric viewpoint, not the Hollywood big media stereotype of that warrior role. And we see it all the time, you know, on the big screen, and it's that sweaty, chiseled figure that's, you know, shooting bazookas and knocking down buildings. And in our tribal communities, that word warrior has a very different connotation. My tribe, we call a warrior Ogichida. And that term has very little to do with what we see on TV or in movies. Mm-hmm. It's somebody who has taken their creator-given talent and ability and developed that over a lifetime so that they could be an asset or a benefit to the tribe that they served. So it was a role that was dedicated from top to bottom towards service. It was somebody who led by example, not perfect example, but somebody who led by example in everything that they did. Somebody asked a question, not what can I get, but what can I do,
mm-hmm.
you know, for someone else. Somebody who, at the end of the day, was fighting for something bigger than their own personal welfare. And that warrior role, it transcends race, gender, age, stage of life. And it's a role that is there for anybody willing to follow it. But it all comes back to contribution in the end. It's what contribution are we making to impact somebody else's life in a positive way. So that's the angle I come from. And, you know, it's not about being the toughest person in the neighborhood. It doesn't require combat boots and a buzz cut. I was in uniform for 14 years. It goes back to the core of who we are as human beings. And, you know, I think we are put here to serve. I think service is our highest calling. It's our deepest need. And in the end, it's the thing that outlives us. It's the legacy we're going to leave behind when we're gone.
Yeah. I mean, that's a theme we pick up on a lot in this podcast. And when you're being intentional about building a culture, it's going to most likely be foundational in serving others versus having the self-served.
Yes.
When you think about organizations that you've worked with and spoken to, you know, what are some of the traits of those organizations that truly do that well, where it's about contribution to others, it's about service? Because I love, again, I wanted to get into the definition from your perspective of that term, because it is, you know, we're in a society where we don't seem to be able to agree on what certain words we thought mean. And
right.
I want to reiterate it. I mean, it's really the developing of your talent over a lifetime to be an asset and be a service to the tribe, and ultimately yeah. to contribute to others, make that your focus. And that is your definition of a warrior. That is the construct of this book, The Warrior Within, is how do you become that person?
Yeah.
What do you see, though, of organizations? What are other traits, characteristics, kind of common themes of organizations that have that warrior spirit?
Well, they keep it front and center. That's the most important thing to remember, is that it's a focus on contribution, on development. A lot of the organizations that I have worked with that I thoroughly enjoy, that I would love to be a part of mm-hmm. if I was living, following a different path in my career, are the ones who have benevolent leaders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, leaders who come from a benevolent place, a place of good intention. And of course, people always go, well, it's not about intention, it's about action. Of course, at the end of the day, we have to take action or nothing gets done.
It starts with intention.
It's got to start with intention. Yeah. Let's not discount action, but it's got to start from, you know, where is it coming from?
Yeah.
And leaders who have, you know, are benevolent are the ones who are looking out for their people, who are, you know, doing good work and trying to create a positive impact and create a culture that people actually enjoy being a part of. You know, creating the right type of environment, how you, you know, treat other people, how you handle problems, how you handle mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, what is most important in your own growth and development? You know, having these, again, we go back to that word, intentionality about these things. It's people who do this on purpose. They're not waiting for good stuff to happen. They're creating that on a daily basis.
Yep.
And so that's what I think is most important. Those organizations that have that warrior spirit intact are the ones that are fostering it on purpose and by design. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you create a resilient organization where people handle problems well. They leverage the heck out of scarce resources. They deal with things like what we just went through the last couple of years. That's where leadership got revealed.
Yeah.
You know, there are some organizations that completely imploded. Everybody felt isolated and it was a mm-hmm. mess. And some organizations actually thrived through yeah. the chaos. And I think it had to do with the work they did before they ever got to that point. So
yeah, the work that no one saw, the foundational work, you know, and I think we're still dealing with the residual effects of that. The pandemic, whether it's over or not, the vast majority of people are back to normalcy of some sort.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure the way things were before it has come back. And I don't know that it ever will.
Yeah, true. But there's some practices, though, that we learned through great stress and strain during that period
right. yep.
that hopefully will carry forward. You know, some of the leaders that I talked to in the different groups I worked with that were involved in, especially healthcare is one because they were taking it in the teeth.
Oh, yeah.
And I work a lot with healthcare organizations, especially across our native communities. As we would have these conversations, a lot of those leaders, because everybody was, you know, working remotely, everything went virtual, but they just started having check-ins with their folks, you know, just little one-on-one, yeah. didn't take long, but just check on them, see how they're doing. And it meant a lot. The feedback that they were getting was people really appreciated that because I don't think we understood how stressed we were, how much anxiety there was, and just being able to kind of have an outlet and be able to talk real talk, you know, about yeah. what's going on was appreciated. And it built trust, you know, with those leaders who were willing to do that. So small steps can have a big impact. A little bit of kindness goes a long way, right?
It does, especially in today's day and age. And you know, you said it earlier, and I think it's true that isolation and aloneness are not a healthy place for people to be. And
no.
being connected to others is, you know, where real community can be built, where real unity can be built, and people can be connected in a very healthy way.
Yeah.
To move forward through very challenging times.
Yeah.
So we had the pleasure of having you speak to our organization earlier this year. I mentioned that at the beginning of our podcast. One of the many things you said that kind of resonated with many people was your discussion on how thick/puffy your jacket is. So I think that would be a great thing for you to describe because, you know, when you hear that term, you're like, what is that all about? But
yeah,
I'd love for you to share that in the context of being a leader.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, leaders, and I'm sure you'd agree with this, need to develop mental toughness.
Yep.
On purpose, by design, right? And the puffy jacket example, and I had such a great time working with you guys. And it's cool that you remembered that story because it's one of those funny things that in the late 70s, early 80s, the puffy jackets were all the rage. And now they're back again with a vengeance. And there's some of them are just ridiculous or so puffy.
Yeah.
But the point I was trying to make with that is in our own lives, we need to foster joy mm-hmm. in what we do on a daily basis. Not wait for the good stuff to show up, but create that on purpose. The things that we do that create fun, that create a strong sense of humor and keep it intact, that give us joy. Things that we do that are just for fun's sake. Mm-hmm. And the reason why that's so important is just like a puffy jacket, the puffier it is, the more cold it keeps out. And the more we foster joy in our own lives, the bigger of a, you know, barrier we create between us and all that negative, nasty stuff.
Yeah.
And it really does help. They're doing studies now. I mean, it seems like a new book rolls onto a shelf on a daily basis now about how this works. But, you know, we live in a society that's tough. And if we're not taking care of ourselves, nobody else is going to do it for us. And creating things that give us joy in life, it keeps our mind in a growth yeah. mindset. It keeps us flexible. It keeps us pliable, where we're able to deal with the stress and strain of the world that we live in. If we don't foster that, we can become really inflexible, really fixed in our position. And that's when the stress really starts to build up.
Yeah.
So that was the whole idea with the puffy jacket is do things that are fun. Watch comedy shows, hang out with fun people, you know, do stuff that gives us joy and do it without guilt. You know, we live in such a goal-oriented society now. Gosh, we feel bad about taking time for ourselves to do something fun or goofy. And I would argue, you know, that self-care piece, it's not selfish. It's the highest form of care we can provide others that we care for. You know, if you kind of loop your head around that, it starts with us. When we do that, like I said, everything we do is better. We're more patient, we're kinder, we're stronger.
Yeah.
We're more in tune with our own values and virtues, and we're a lot more likely to practice them in real life.
Well, as you said that, one of our previous guests, who's also a dear friend of mine, Steve D'Annunzio, we were talking about that very topic. And I said, you know, I feel selfish doing this. And for lack of a better word, self-care, you know,
I've
had a motor running at high speed for several years, like many leaders.
Yeah.
And he said, Tim, think of it as being soulfish.
Wow.
Caring for your soul is not selfish, because it puts you in a place to be better equipped to be a asset and a contributor to others.
That's it.
So I talked to him about what that might look like in practice, and I can say that I have put some of that into practice this year, and it's been incredibly powerful, and it gets back to pace, and the old adage of you got to slow down to go fast.
Isn't that crazy? But true, I agree 100%. I feel like the slower I go, the better quality decisions I make.
Yeah.
I feel like when I'm going slow, that's the most likely time that joy and happiness will bubble up into my life.
There's room for it.
That's it. It doesn't happen when you're running around 1,000 miles an hour.
Our society for years, if you think about it, kind of valued leisure. And then somewhere along the lines, it valued busyness.
Yeah. Yeah. And we compare that, right? Oh, I'm so busy. Oh, I'm so busy.
Yeah. It became the new mark of success.
Right.
Not how much leisure time you had, but how busy you were. And I think it's I'd call it a lie that a lot of people have bought into. Yeah, the SEALs, you know, you come from the Air Force, the SEALs have a great saying, which is slow is smooth.
Smooth.
And smooth is fast.
Smooth is fast.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I wanted to touch on the puffy jacket story, because with what you started with, mental toughness, mental resiliency is critical in today's day and age for anybody. And certainly if you're a leader, it's really critical, because you are dealing with the stresses and strains of outside influences you have no control over. You're dealing with the stresses and strains of the people that you are under your charge from a leadership perspective and trying to serve. And then you're most likely, if you're in a business setting, you actually have a business that needs to be run. So,
yep, wearing many hats.
Yeah, many hats and many things coming at you. So,
right.
You know, I've had a lot of great things to share. I'm curious, is there any other advice, as you think about it, that you would give a business owner, a leader, an entrepreneur regarding driving greater collaboration and innovation in the workplace? Because a lot of what we're talking about isn't innovative in the sense that people think, oh, here's the iPhone, but it's innovative in the sense of how you impact the purpose and community of an organization.
Yeah. And how we use resources and how we do things better this year than we did last year.
Last year.
Not because we're hoping for it, but because we're creating it that way on purpose. Yeah. Collaboration and innovation requires vulnerability, and it requires a playful spirit. Mm-hmm. You know, being able to be open and say, hey, I've got a great idea, but it might not be the best idea. And when you sit down with other people and you start bouncing ideas, that's where the fun stuff really starts. You know, you can create some really cool stuff and creatively repurpose the resources you're already using in a very different way and get a completely different result. You know, and that's really what innovation comes down to. It's sometimes we have just the same resources, but the way that we deploy them, the way that we use them, that's where the creativity part comes in. And we shouldn't do that alone. When we put a bunch of brains in a room and we have these conversations about what it might look like and we keep the goal in mind, there's many ways to get there. And some are going to be more efficient and more effective than others. But you know, that collaboration innovation should never stop. It should always be fostered, grown on purpose. And it starts with us as a leader. You know, being able to ask people, you know, four of the most powerful questions you can ever ask your people is, what do you think? Number one, their wheels get turning and you get buy-in from people too, because even when they're sharing their ideas, you know, you can't promise you'll use all of them. But even when I was an officer in the Air Force, all the teams that I led, I always said, but I want to know what you think.
Yeah.
You know, I can't guarantee you we're going to use all the ideas that are presented, but I definitely want to hear your perspective, what you think we should do to get to that goal, how you think we could do it differently, how we could do it better, how could we improve things? And when you have that intentionality, people are willing to contribute and you come up with some killer ideas that you wouldn't have come up with on your own.
You know, the theme we've talked about in this podcast a lot both a word we've used today a lot, intentionality, but also vulnerability. And, you know, it's interesting because, again, I think there's a whole segment of what people believe a leader is to not be vulnerable. That's a sign of weakness.
Yeah. Yeah. Or to never admit that we don't know everything.
Yeah.
What a terrible corner to paint ourselves into, you know, where we don't ask for help. And
I have all the answers. And
Oh my gosh.
I am perfect. I have no problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I see that changing in our culture, but I don't know how long that will take. But it's definitely, it's a theme that keeps coming up in our conversations on this podcast. And
yeah,
it's one that I think a lot of people are still not comfortable with. But I know from our own experience in our business that vulnerability builds trust.
It does. And it's also the best leadership by example there is.
Yep.
Because when your people see you do that as a leader, they're going to be more likely to do the same thing and say, hey, I don't understand how this works. I need some guidance here. Yeah. Instead of just going, nope, I'll figure it out all on my own. You know, it's like, why would you bang your head on a wall over and over again when the person next to you built a ladder? And that starts with us as a leader. You know, we want to foster that in our teams too, to be able to say, hey, I don't know everything in the world, but we can figure it out as a team and keep moving forward. But if I'm stuck and I don't understand something, I'm going to say it. I'm going to get the answers I need so that we can move forward as a group. It's not about stroking our pride and ego. It's about getting stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really the focus. You know, if we focus on that, then these things are a little bit easier to practice.
Yeah. Well, DJ, I really appreciate your time with us today. Appreciate your service to our country and the United States Air Force, your service to the Native American communities across this country that are, unfortunately, often people are not aware of both the contributions they make even today to our society, but some of the challenges. And I think your work and your passion has probably made a great impact in those communities, and appreciate the books, but the most recent book, The Warrior Within, you've written, and the speaking you do, and the inspiration you give leaders like myself and the many leaders that in the organization we spoke to, or you spoke to. So really appreciate you being with us here on Winning Through Culture. Thank you.
Chimi Gwechniji, thank you very much, my friend, for having me. It's been a pleasure. I've loved working with you and your group in the past and really have enjoyed being here with you today. So thank you.
Well, thank you for the time. And thank you to our listeners for spending some time with us on another episode of Winning Through Culture. Until we're together again, be impactful and be relevant.